This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So something that you talk a lot about in your work is the worst day cycle. Yeah. I'm wondering if we can start out by you telling us a little bit about what that is and sure. how it applies to people who have maybe experienced narcissistic abuse.
Yeah, it's a four-stage process. The stages are trauma, fear, shame, and denial. Stage one is every single person on this planet has been through childhood trauma. It's unavoidable. We're human. We're perfectly imperfect. Almost not a single parent takes a class on how to be a parent. And so whether on purpose, which is rare, but most often just because they don't know, they make mistakes. And those mistakes leave wounds. That's trauma. And trauma is one of two things. It either disempowers you or it falsely empowers you. So an example would be the narcissist is a falsely empowered child who, you know, when they were traumatized, they went falsely empowered, okay? Mm. The person attracted to the narcissist went disempowered. That's how they chose to adapt to the trauma they experienced. When we experience that trauma, it creates a fear reaction. And I won't get into all the dynamics going on in fear, but really that fear reaction creates an emotional chemical addiction. Our brain and body actually becomes addicted to re-experiencing that feeling, because many people are mistaken. They believe that our thoughts drive our feelings and behavior. It's not true. We've known for decades, every thought, every action, everything our brain processes is somebody's listening to me. They're having an emotional reaction before they ever have the thought. And so those emotions drive our behavior. Well, when we keep experiencing that trauma, when it's either, you know, because it's disempowering or falsely empowering, that creates shame. All right. Mm. Now that shame experience, we lose our authentic self. We lose our self-esteem. Well, that places us in what I call the attachment authenticity bind. All right. So as a child, to survive, we must physically and emotionally attach to another human being or we'll die. The other thing we need is the pursuit of our authenticity. This is our own morals and values, needs and wants, negotiables and non-negotiables, our inherent power, the vision we have of our own world, our authentic dreams. Well, in childhood, because parents mostly shame their child when they make a mistake, they send the message, you are bad, not that behavior was less than perfect. Mm-hmm. Well, there the child is placed in the attachment authenticity bind. Wait a minute. If I go pursue myself, and the other thing that happens here is when they make the mistake, or even if they haven't made a mistake, the proof of childhood trauma is if they ever felt angry, sad, or scared at anything their parents did or said, could they mention it? Well, of course not. Eric, get in your room. I don't want to hear it. No back talk. Right there, the authenticity is that's trauma. Mm. The inability to express our authentic feelings and thoughts. And so in that moment, they are placed in a trauma bind. They drop their authentic selves for attachment. And this becomes the shame persona that they develop. They think this is who they are. Well, 80% of people will say their childhood was perfect. But the first 7 years of life, our brain is in a theta brainwave state. So that's hypnosis. So none of us we're hypnotized basically the first 7 years of life. We develop a persona or personality. We think this is us. Well, most of the trauma has happened by then. And so that's stage four, denial, self-deception. So we minimize, condone, justify, suppress, repress all the trauma we've been through and how we were placed in this bind, and don't are not in reality that we're out of, that we've lost touch with our authentic self and developed a persona to create attachment with our parents. Now, the difficulty with this is once we become an adult and now have agency, because our brain doesn't know right from wrong, our brain only knows what it's known, what it's lived, and what it hasn't lived. And it takes tremendous energy for our brain to do any work. 25% of all of our calories go just to thinking and operating in our brain. So our brain has developed an incredible strategy. It repeats what it already knows, even if it's destructive. So in the case of a person who grew up with a narcissistic parent, you know, since that's primarily your platform, you could put them in a room with 20,000 people, only one of them a narcissist, and like radar, their brain would come out and go, yeah, they're all, you know, make them all the opposite sex or whatever sex they like and the characteristics they want. They'd come out and say, oh my God, they're all gorgeous and funny and all these different things, but there's something about this one. Their brain gets conditioned that that is home. That's what I want. And so this happens, so they repeat that worst day cycle. So they get into this relationship, they repeat the trauma, the fear happens, they go into shame, they suppress their authentic self for attachment with this person, go into denial about the abuse because it's a learned behavior. The brain's just repeating what it knows. And so this is a process, whether you were raised by it's everybody. In three questions, you could take whoever you think is the most successful, balanced, normal person you know, and in three questions, I can blow up their life and say, and show them how much trauma they're in and how they're stuck in the worst day cycle. It's a human dynamic. It's not just certain people. It's because we've never taught what I call emotional authenticity. It's what we do as humans. And so I'm offering a process that if people chose, we could break that cycle and not have to self-victimize, because that's what happens as an adult. The shame and denial portions create an emotional chemical addiction to re-victimize ourselves, just like, you know, we become the victimizer, the oppressor, as an adult. That's why we choose these people, places, and things and situations for several reasons. One, it's a certainty of outcome. And because there's safety in, even if it's bad, I know what's going to happen. That also gives me power. But think of it. You've been through some tough times in your life, right?
Sure.
Okay. If you don't mind being a little vulnerable, do you remember at the very bottom, no matter what the situation was, and you're going, God, I knew it. Why did I do this? And everything. And you're being hard on yourself, which is the shame part of it. And you're getting out of denial into reality that, and the truth that I played a part. I didn't listen to my authentic gut feeling here. In that moment, when you're in that little bit of truth and contemplating taking responsibility, because I teach truth, responsibility, healing, and forgiveness, there's a sense of hope. Well, wait a minute. If I do it different next time. And so that's, we're glancing at reconnecting to our authentic self. The problem is no one's taught us emotional authenticity. And I use in my first book, Your Journey to Success, I use this metaphor. We've all been sledding before, right? Picture going sledding. It's snowed 3 feet overnight and you walk up the hill to the top and you go down the first time. And then what are you going to do? You're going to follow the same steps because it's easier to step in the snow that's already been stepped on than new snow. And you're going to go down that path again. Well, if you go down that path a couple of times, you can't steer out of it. That's the worst day cycle. You can tell yourself all you want, but until you get into truth, take responsibility, healing, and forgiveness through the process of emotional authenticity, you don't recognize that the cycle started the second you took a step up the hill. You're not aware that you're already in the worst day cycle and how each of these steps, and so that's what my process teaches, is you become aware of all those steps. And so then you're able to create new steps so that you get to the top of the hill you're faced with your brain wanting to repeat what it knows, but you take two steps to left, and now you carve a new emotional neural pathway that your brain gets stuck in that works for you and no longer works against you. So that's a very glancing blow. I'm leaving out a ton of the subtleties and things that
Sure.
really bring it home, but that's basically what's happening to everyone on the planet in any life situation.
How did you discover this?
Because I'm such a train wreck, because I'm so good at that. I
That
mean,
how we all come
of course,
to
yeah. I mean, my parents were 16 and 18 when they were married, 21 and 23 with four kids. They were babies raising babies.
Yeah.
And my dad was beat to death as a kid. He never hit us, but he was still filled with rage because we don't teach that we've all been through trauma and we need to heal as an adult.
Yeah.
And my mom became an alcoholic. And so my biggest detachment from self happened at I think it was around 10 years old. I woke up in the middle of the night just to use the bathroom, opened up the door, and found my mom passed out naked on the toilet. It's when I discovered she was an alcoholic.
Oh,
And
gosh.
I tell this story in the book. I remember as soon as I saw her, and I can still feel it. It's almost like Star Trek, the buzzing, like starting in my feet, moving up through me, and I screaming inside, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying. And I just, boom. I just separated. And so, because I didn't know how any of this worked, I relived the worst day cycle. I suffered through multiple addictions. I married two narcissists. The first one was a narcissistic sociopath. She was also physically and verbally abusive.
Oh my gosh.
She alienated me from our children. I went bankrupt fighting for them. I played two professional sports, reliving the trauma against myself, thinking this is what I wanted. It's pure trauma based. And then in my through the divorce of my second marriage, I spent 3 days in my office contemplating suicide. Actually, the email I sent my therapist is in my first book of when I'm right in the midst of that. And I was trying to write my kids a note. And the part that was easy was describing the pain I was in. Where I got into trouble was when I tried to describe why this would be best for all of us. Well, I saw my first therapist at 21. I'd been seeing therapists for decades, and it wasn't until I met one, a guy named Mike Pinkston, after my first marriage, that he knew what he was doing. Most are vastly underqualified and uneducated on how any, because they just learn how to diagnose and prescribe. They don't learn how to heal, and they don't know about codependence or any of these dynamics. That's not what they're taught in school. But Mike went and learned all that stuff. And so the problem was, is I tried to justify why this would be help everyone be the best thing. I'm like, that's transference, that's codependence, that's been like I knew too much psychology. I could not shrink myself. So I went back in my office. I got really angry because I'm like, I shouldn't be here. I've been chasing recovery at that point 20 some years. And here I am about to
Jeez.
take my life. And I went, that's it. And I wrote down, I want to fundamentally, and I might be forgetting it, I have it written down, but it's something along the lines of, I want to discover groundbreaking processes that'll fundamentally change and transform the psychology, psychiatry field, and how we take care of people. And create processes that will actually help people heal. And from that point on, the second I wrote that down, I went through a 2 or 3 year period that I don't know how to explain it. I just started putting pieces together that I haven't seen other people talk about, and it's just continued since then. And
That's incredible. That is
yeah.
incredible. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that with us. That is just such a powerful story. And I would love to hear more about, I mean, obviously you've spent so much time healing and growing and working on yourself. How did you find these pieces?
It's a weird thing. See, there. One thing I've realized is trauma is a tremendous gift. The problem is nobody's taught us how to find the gift. Everyone's getting away from it. Don't talk about it. Don't do it. Oh, it's awful. No. I realized if you want to get out of this hell, go become an expert in the pain and the darkness. I mean, that's a fact of nature. The light only comes after the dark. You got to, and so most processes are avoid the dark, only the light. Well, you're never in the light because you're always avoiding this. Well, until, and remember, we feel before we think. So until you can navigate the complete spectrum of emotions and you can survive those so-called negative dark ones, you don't have recovery. Well, that's my skill set. And so that's what I learned to do. Well, a funny thing happens because of my childhood. It was so chaotic and I was so abandoned and so left alone that my defense mechanism back then, and these are the things you learn when you investigate the dark, was that I became hyper aware of everything and I watched. I became an incredible analyzer of the subtle little things anyone or anything would do. And so what happens is when I listen to another teacher or healer talk, or I read their content, I read a sentence and I go, oh my God, they left this out. They're missing this step. Like I see the next step after. And, so they're like, I mean, the whole denial process the Freuds came up with, it's listed as a defense mechanism. Well, it starts as that, but it is the single greatest killer on the planet today. When left unaddressed, it is an attack mechanism. No one's ever even done that. My newest book, Your Journey to Being Yourself, I show how at the heart, if you're not recovering, it's because you're in massive self-deception and denial and nobody's shown you how to get out of it. And so I lay out a process because the Freuds, nobody's ever laid out a process. Here's how you do it. And that's how my brain works because of this is what I found by becoming an expert in the dark and the pain. That's where all the answers are. And
Can
so
you
it,
talk more about that? How do you investigate your darkness for people who are listening? What does that mean? What does that look like? What is that process?
okay, so everyone's afraid of they don't want to change or do the recovery work because it'll hurt. Right? That's the darkness,
Sure.
pain. Well, they don't realize that's self-deception. And they won't realize it until they get started on it. And so once that's what I realized, I was scared too. Once I
Sure.
started, I'm like, wait a minute. This is just discomfort. And for the first time, because it's all self-deception when you're here thinking the darkness is pain. But once you confront your self-deception, you look back and you go, oh my God, that was pain. I'm picking these terrible people, the wrong careers. Like, look at my life story. That's because I'm avoiding this. I don't want to go in the dark. And I think I can get through life without it. Well, and that's why I almost took my life. And so once I did the opposite, because that's the thing about recovery. Almost every answer in recovery, it's a paradox. It's almost the opposite of everything we've been taught. And a paradox is that this is what I learned to do is to paradox everything in my life. So a paradox is when you take a seemingly absolutely absurd concept or idea that you would never pursue, like the dark and pain, but through deeper investigation, you discover that it might be valid and, in fact, that it's true. And so I learned to paradox everything I think, everything I feel. So here's an example. People would go, I never want to feel this again. Well, let's paradox that. I want to feel this again. I've always sought to have this feeling. Boom, truth hits. Wait a minute. How did I seek it out? Oh my God, I knew the day I met that. Like, here's a perfect example. My second wife. I'm standing there on our first date. I've only said this about one person in my life, and it was her. I'm standing there waiting for her. I turn. She's about 15 feet away from me, walking towards me, and I go, oh my God, she's the devil. I knew. I knew. So I wanted to feel that way, because by destroying myself through that relationship and almost taking my life, I gave up the last piece of recovery I was never willing to deal with. Remember how I said in my childhood, I learned to, you know, critique the whole world. That's a control mechanism. I wasn't willing to let that go. That's what was killing me. And so I realized, like I read about in my book, the day I realized I've got to let it go, this is my problem. And I went, I can still see myself walking down the hallway, crying as I'm going to bed and thinking, tomorrow I have to wake up and not know what to do.
Wow. Why?
So I woke, I just woke up the next morning. I walk out to this area, the family room is here, dining room is here, and I just stood there, just tears. And for the first time, no thoughts. Wasn't trying to figure anything out. And I stood there, I know, maybe 10, 12 minutes, just crying. And then all of a sudden I heard a voice go, sit on the couch. And then about 5, 7 minutes, walk to the gym. And I learned how to let life come to me. Well, the only way I got into that light and that peace and that quiet and understanding is I faced the dark. I paradoxed everything. I went towards it. I didn't avoid it. The answer is in the opposite. And my new book shows everyone how everything is in the opposite and how you see that there's an opposite and then pursue it. And you do that by paradoxing. And so what your normal belief system is, oh, I never wanted this. That's a lie. And when you learn how to do this, you'll feel it. Your authentic self, that's the beautiful thing, is no matter how awful of a person you've been or awful things you've been through, you never lose your inherent value and worth. That's the authentic self without the shame and denial. And so when you paradox it and you start spinning those questions around, you'll feel it. And you'll kind of go, ah, no, but it's a truth you can't run from. Now, you may not be ready to face that truth about yourself, but now you know. Now you know.
So, question for you. How do you explain to people who, you know, have been experienced narcissistic abuse, have been in a relationship, or have been raised by a narcissist? How do you explain that they wanted that, or they wanted to feel that way, or that, and correct
well,
me if
let
I'm
me make
wrong.
It clear. As a child, no, they're not responsible for that. They were victimized. Now, it is true that many children, once they've been traumatized and victimized, they will do things to recreate the trauma while they're with their abuser, if it's a parent, sibling, whatever. I don't hold them responsible for that. That's a life-saving mechanism. They're just doing anything to survive.
Right. Yeah, right? I agree with that.
You know, that's very common. That, and that's, you know, Stockholm Syndrome. That's actually, you know, pretty great strategy, you know.
Totally.
8, 10, 12, I can't go out on my own. And so why wouldn't I find ways to create this abuse? Because I get attachment. The abuse is confirmation that we're attached. And so that's why a child would do that. That's smart. The problem is, once they become an adult, they now, that's the worst day cycle that's been programmed. They're stuck in it. They're in self-deception and denial and don't see that, oh no, now you're doing it to yourself, because you could stop it. You don't have to. But again, I don't blame them, because look, you can only be blamed if you consciously know what you're doing and you choose to continue it. Well, these people don't know about the worst day cycle, emotional authenticity, the authentic self cycle, scales of injustice, like all these things I developed and taught. So they're just doing the best they can with the information they know. They're not to blame. Now, here's the dividing line. Once you run into my content and hear the stuff and hear that there's a new way, for the first time in your life, you have a choice. Like I had a client yesterday, 51-year-old woman, and I walked her into her self-deception. And for the first time in her life, like, she just sat there, she's like being hard on herself. And I said to her, I said, when did you learn about this stuff? She goes, right now. I said, how old are you? 51. So are you to blame? Like, is it your fault? You just learned in this moment. How could you have done any of this when you didn't even know it was, like, you didn't even know, you weren't aware that there was anything like this out there? And that freed her up. And that's the dividing line. But as I said to her, but now the downside is now that you are aware, you have a choice for the first time in your life. So you get to decide, do you want to reclaim your authentic self, or do you want to consciously choose to blame yourself and repeat these patterns? It's up to you. I don't judge you either way, but I'm just letting you know that now you're at that nexus point. It's a fulcrum. Now you get to decide. You didn't have a choice before. And so that's when you can, if you want, choose to blame yourself, is once you become aware that there is an option and you don't choose it, well, that possibility is on you. So does that help you
That helps. Thank you
clarify
for
that I'm
clarifying that.
not placing blame on a child?
Got it. Got it. Yeah, totally.
And I'm not placing blame on the adult either. I'm placing them in responsibility. Two different things. Because blame says you did something wrong, you knew you were doing it wrong, and you don't want to take responsibility for it. Responsibility says, yes, I did something wrong. I didn't know I was doing it wrong, but now that I'm aware, I'm going to do the work so I don't do it again. And that's what I teach, is a clear dividing line. But see, our culture loves this whole false victim position of saying nice things to people. And so they'd call what I teach, some call what I teach victim blaming. That in itself is paradox that they're deceiving these people by not teaching them a personal responsibility, and that guarantees they'll be a victim. So the so-called victim protectors, they're creating more victims. It's a paradox. It's in the opposite.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, how do you, what, I guess, what gets in the way? What most gets in the way of achieving this emotional authenticity, of getting to your reclaiming your true authentic self?
Knowledge. We can't do what we don't know. And so it's a commitment and a choice. You know, when I met my therapist, while I was going through that first divorce with the abusive spouse and all the different things, and I kind of gave him an outline, the first meeting of my childhood and the trauma and all that, and my ex-wife. And I had done enough work that I knew somewhere in there I had some responsibility, but no one had taught, I didn't know the process. And so I summed everything up with, you know, Mike, I just don't know how to be a man. I was 38, 39 years old. And I said, I just don't know how to be a man. And he said 13 words that changed my life. He said, you know, Kenny, when I was in your shoes, I went and became an expert. From that moment, if he suggested a book, a class, I took it. I became voracious at pursuing knowledge. So the what people want to do is they just want to watch 15-second TikTok videos or 30-second memes, or that they don't want to do the work. Like, that ain't gonna do it. Even reading my books, I think are great, ain't gonna do it. You got to take classes, you got to work with a professor, like you got to do the work. Like, I figured over a 10-year period, there were always, I took breaks. But I think I saw Mike once a week for 7 out of those 10 years. He was an hour and a half away. I was going through bankruptcy, and the one bill I paid was to see him weekly and the group that was at his office weekly, the gas and all of that. I made damn sure. Well, people don't want to do it. They don't want to give up their Starbucks and their Hulu and streaming services and their fancy phone. Like, you know, I was sleeping in an apartment with no furniture, no bed. All I had were blankets and a pillow. And at that time, I had a construction company. I had two sawhorses, piece of plywood with my computer, and the computer was there just to do my recovery work. Like,
That's
that, I'm not
dedication.
saying you have to live that Spartan, but I'm saying it's a commitment. You have to decide, I'm done. And well, and their denial mechanisms, the reason somebody doesn't do that, doesn't pursue recovery, is they're still getting too many victim benefits from their trauma. And they're in denial about how many benefits they're getting. And until the consequences of those self-victimizations become more powerful then the benefits, they won't pursue it.
What
They're
are some of those
deception.
perceived benefits?
Well, let's look at it. What happens if I pick, once again, a terrible partner? And what do most people do? They post on social media or make comments on someone like mine about how terrible their ex was. And then what happens? 300 people, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're so smart. You're so handsome. Oh my God, I can't believe they did that to you. So do you see what that is? Now I just got this person to care more about fixing my problem than I do. I don't have to take responsibility. I get to play the victim. That allows me also to stay the child, the hurt child who's stuck in trauma, fear, shame, and denial. I never have to look at, wait a minute, every single relationship, the only way it happens is we pick somebody. It didn't just happen randomly out of the millions of men or women, whichever you like, you chose that one. Well, why? You could have countless others, but you picked that one. That's on you until you figure that out, but they don't want to. So that's, we reward the victim. There's so many payoffs. I don't have to take responsibility. I get to stay the victim, which means I get to be the child, post and tell people about how awful the other person is, which then gets them to take care more about fixing it than me. So why would I ever deal with my problem if you're going to sit there and go, oh my God, you should do this, you should do that. Do you see what I lose? Tension, power, control, manipulation, but I get to stay the disempowered victim while I sit there and go, oh, they're so awful. It works, and our culture totally supports it. So there's a lot of benefits. Well, until the consequences of replaying that cycle. And that's what happened to me. The consequence, I was about to take my life. That's a pretty severe consequence. And then I finally was ready to face my self-deception and denial. I thought I could live life by controlling everyone and everything. I had to let go of my self-deception. I had to get into truth and take responsibility. Do the
Yeah.
that last bit of healing work and forgive myself that I couldn't get there until I destroyed myself enough to be ready for it. Well, that's what's keeping people, and that's deep recovery work. Like we were talking before this started, most of the stuff out there is, building a puzzle. It's the border. The simple stuff, the happy little memes, the catchy little phrases, simple little programs that make me feel good. But if you want that picture in your life, you don't get it from the border. You get it by building the middle. Well, most coaches, most teachers don't teach the middle. My expertise is the middle. And that's self-deception work. That's the only way if you want that life, you need to become an expert in your self-deception and denial. And that's my skill set. I teach people how to build the middle of the puzzle.
So I know we don't have a ton of time to dive into all of that as much as I would love to, but can you give us an overview
Sure.
of what
I'll
that work
keep it
is?
really simple. I'll just do the border of the puzzle because it can be overwhelming. Here are three questions that'll show you that you can ask anyone and it'll prove to you we've all been through massive childhood
Okay.
trauma and how the worst day cycle works. It'll convince you of the worst day cycle and the need for emotional authenticity. The first question is, when any life event happens, ask yourself, what am I feeling? Now, I have free feelings wheels on my website that you can download if you go to the resources tab. And I tell people, keep that with you. And as often as possible, in the beginning, 3 to 5 times a day, just stop and look at it. Even if you don't feel anything's happening, go, what am I feeling?
Yeah.
Okay. Identify, depending on how detached you, if you're severely detached from your authentic self, you'll have very little feelings. The closer your attachment is, you'll have more feelings. Those early will only be able to pick up on the feelings in the center of the wheel. Those with a little bit more recovery will be able to identify feelings further out on the wheel. Okay? So there's one way to gauge your attachment to yourself. All right? So what am I feeling? Once you identify that, if it's several, ask yourself, what's the predominant one? Focus on that one. Then sit in that and go, okay, where am I feeling it in my body? Stomach, chest, head, arms, back, somewhere there. It might be in two or three places. really focus on that feeling in your body and that feeling word. And then ask yourself the third question. What's my first memory of having this feeling? Almost instantly, someone will remember something in the last week to 2 years. Write it down. Then ask yourself, okay, what's the one before that? 5 years, write it, or maybe a couple events, and keep going. Eventually, you're going to arrive at a moment in childhood, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 years old. You may not have a specific memory, but you'll have a feeling reality of, God, it feels like I was about 4 years old. I don't know what happened, but this is where I learned disgust. Bingo. What people don't realize is we're not born with emotions. Every emotion is a simulation, concept, and definition that we learn from our parents and the society we were raised in. And so there's the proof that something happened in your childhood that was traumatic, that got defined as disgust, and you've been stuck in the worst day cycle, reliving it over and over and over and over. And so that also shows you, okay, I need a lot more than emotional intelligence. I need emotional authenticity to learn, okay, how am I going to create a new simulation, concept, and definition? Emotional intelligence, see, that's the dark. They don't teach you how to do it. Emotional intelligence doesn't even teach you that every single emotion you experience in childhood or every single emotional reaction is because of something you learned in childhood. So they don't even deliver on their four promises. I hate to say this. I don't want to be disparaging, because I wouldn't have a career had they not made that a mainstream phrase, that it was okay to talk about emotions. But their process, you don't have emotional intelligence. You barely have the outer edges of the puzzle. Well, what I just described to you is 10 times deeper than emotional intelligence, but it doesn't even scratch the surface of all the other layers that you need. You need codependence recovery, all of these different things. That's part of emotional authenticity. But that gives people a basic to get into truth and reality of what I'm saying is, oh my God, I think he might have a point. Like, one of two things will happen to you. You're either going to go, oh my God, this is great, I see it. Or you're going to be hesitant, no, it's not my parents. Well, that's your left hemisphere. It's a denial-making monster. Our intellect, our left hemisphere, is the biggest reason we all struggle. Because all information comes into our right hemisphere. We have an emotional reaction first. It sends it over to our left, which is supposed to trim it down and categorize it and then send it back to the right, but it doesn't. That's what's missing. We don't have emotional authenticity because we've always taught intellect and thoughts are everything. We're massively, you know, so everything's detailed analysis. There's no rounding out of the emotional process. And so the left hemisphere, so pick your political party, the party that you hate and how they're shown that they're lying. That's their left hemisphere, because the way the left hemisphere works is even when shown proof, like I just showed proof of how this works, the left hemisphere will double down in its falseness. It'll keep going. And this is part of why we keep repeating the worst day cycle, is even with proof that this isn't working, our left hemisphere will drive us to keep doing it. And then it has one final trick up its sleeve. It flips the script and makes itself the victim. And so emotional authenticity teaches you how you're left, how you're stuck in your left hemisphere, how you're doing that, and then by paradoxing everything, which gets you back to use, you know, the final piece to bring it to the right hemisphere. So you get a full complete picture of exactly what's going on. You have a much more higher intellect, even thought intellect and emotion intellect balance. You can put an end to the repetition of the worst day cycle and everything else. You need to learn a lot of things to do that.
Sounds like it. We've been tossing this term around, emotional authenticity. What does that actually mean to you?
For me, it consists of what I call the authentic self cycle: truth, responsibility, healing, and forgiveness. So emotional authenticity, the process I've developed, requires you to get in truth, which means you need to be an expert at confronting your self-deception and denial. And you need to see how we are the authors of everything, nothing is an accident. So let's say I finished this and went out and grabbed the mail and I got hit by a car. Most people would say that's an accident. It's not true. Even as I'm sitting here talking to you, my brain is processing sight, sound, smell, touch, taste. I'm having emotional reactions to that, even if I'm not consciously aware of that. And so something in those emotions created the thought, I should go check the mail. It wasn't an accident. I write about this in my next book, because I was trying to describe kind of this question. And I was getting really angry. I couldn't figure it out. And I went downstairs and made a cup of coffee. And I came back up and I started writing even more angry. And then I went, wait a minute. I did. What am I feeling? Where am I body? What's my first memory? And I retraced my steps. I went, okay, wait a minute. What happened? I went downstairs. I was standing there making the coffee. My feet were cold on the tile. What's my first memory? Oh my God. Because of my mom's drinking, I used to make myself sick and hurt. And I'd run 104, 105 degree temperatures, and she'd have to give me an ice bath to get my fever down. I hate the cold. So that's what was, I was angry. As I'm standing there making coffee, I'm feeling angry. I'm not consciously aware of it. Then I grab the warmth of the coffee, which soothes me, which reminds me of how my mom used to, before every hockey game, she'd wear this ratty good luck red sweater with holes in it. My mom was very haute couture, but she'd do that for me, and she'd grab me by my cheeks and she'd go, give them hell, kid. And I felt the warmth of that. Then but I walked over and I grabbed a handful of popcorn, stuffed it in my mouth, felt guilt and shame because I'm like, man, I feel a little fat. I don't know if I should have done that. As I turned the corner, a loud car drove by honking. Well, my dad had a booming voice and would scream and yell at me. And my older brother, when I was asleep, would scream in my ear. More trauma. Go upstairs. So I realized all of that's going on. And we're not consciously aware. Well, that's emotional authenticity. When you can break your life down like that, you know that you'll be able to find the reason why you walked out the house at that moment and got hit by a car. That's truth. That's responsibility. That's healing. And now I can forgive myself and my parents and the people who taught me those emotional reactions that got me replaying the worst day cycle. And I ended up out there at that time, because now I know exactly what happened. I'm set free. And all of that came from becoming an expert in the dark, all that we don't want to learn about or deal with or admit to. And the only way you get that is through truth.
Wow. Thank you so much. Sounds like you've done a lot of your own personal work to get here and to spread that to everyone else who you're.
I'm full of a lot of, as my mom would say, shit. I've had a lot to confront, a lot of denial and self-deception. I still have tons more, but I am very proud of the work I've done and how far I've come from where I started. And, you know, the greatest thing it gives you, at least for me, is I can be okay with not everything being okay. I still have days where I get stuck standing right there at the top of my stairs, staring out the window, just like a child when I was frozen, stuck, helpless, hopeless, blank, numb, have no clue how to take care of myself, no idea what to do, and I'll stand there for hours. I can be imperfect and broken and in trauma and be at peace and allow myself the best I can do at that moment is to be okay. Just because I'm a teacher and all this, I don't have to be perfect. It's okay that that's the best I can do in that moment. That to me is peace. And that's the embracing of the dark. I can be in the dark and I can still feel my authentic self, which is inherent value and worth. I can reclaim it. I can reclaim it. And that's what emotional authenticity gives you. And thank God for emotional intelligence, but it doesn't give you that, unfortunately.
Well, here's to our darkness.
Amen.
Yeah. Penny, is there anything that you would like to leave our audience with? Anything that you want them to take home with them?
Yeah, I did this several years ago. The beginning steps of developing emotional authenticity, I think, should be mandated that everybody learn them. And that's, you know, those beginning three questions. What am I feeling? Where in my body do I feel it? what's my first memory. And so that initial masterclass I give away for free to teach people the basics. And also you'll learn about the worst day cycle in there, exactly how the four stages work. It's not the complete, it's very deep. Each video is like an hour long. I mean, my book is the full process, Your Journey to Success, but it lets you, it opens the door up to, okay, now I know what the outer edges of the puzzle are. I can get the basics and begin working with this and begin learning how to reattach to my authentic self. And then if you decide, you can take the full set of classes, but it at least opens the doorway until you're ready for the full set of classes to truly reclaim your authentic self. But it gets you into the first step of truth. And you have to get there. If you can't get there, you're just not going to make it out of that dark. And so that's called your, gosh, I'm forgetting the name of the class. I think it's called Your Journey to Emotional Authenticity. You can find it. The website is www.thegreatnessyou, the letter U.com. So it's thegreatnessyou.com. You'll see it. It's in gold.
We'll link to
Right
it.
there. Yeah, and it says free, and you can sign up for that masterclass for free.
Awesome. And we'll have all your information so that folks can find
Yeah,
you.
just put the link in the thing. Yeah, and
Yeah.
where they can get the free class, and it'll take them right to it.
We'll do that. We'll do that. Well, Kenny, thank you so much for being here, for sharing a little bit of your story and a lot of your expertise with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And for those that have decided to stick around to the end, I would like to say it's not your fault. You did the best you could with where you were at the time, and it doesn't make you bad. No matter what you've done or what you've been through, you never lose your inherent value and worth. And my hope is you can attach to that. And even if what I've said makes you feel a little uncomfortable, hopefully you recognize that underneath that. Because here's one other thing about the way denial works. I want to just end with this. Whenever we judge, blame, hate, and criticize, we're always talking about ourselves. It's not about them. But that works in the opposite. Also, it's a paradox. So whenever you notice greatness in somebody else, if there's some movie person or friend or whatever that you just think is amazing, the only reason you can see it in them is because it's in you. And don't, that's your inherent value and worth. You see it, you just don't know how to attach to it yet. But don't forget that. You can't see anything in others that's not in you. So when you see greatness in them, you're seeing your authentic self and your full potential.
I love that. That's a very validating way of putting it and a nice spin on comparison, which we often do.
Yeah, trauma makes us, the shame part makes us think we're bad people, and we're not. We're just perfectly imperfect and we're hurt. That's all.
Well said. Well said. Thank you, Kenny. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.